You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
25 years after Deng Xiaoping introduced market reform policies in China, the country is today more divided by income than Indonesia, India, or the United States. As a result, the number of people involved in mass demonstrations and riots has risen dramatically, especially over the past 10 years. To get a picture of the current conditions for workers in China, we've contacted Robert Weil. He's a labor organizer and university lecturer in Santa Cruz, California. He's also a senior research fellow at the Oakland Institute, where his work focuses on the rapid social and economic changes taking place in China and their impact on the rest of the world. Robert Weil joins me this morning from his home in Santa Cruz. Good morning, Robert.
Morning.
Now, you visited China in 2004 to find out more about the effects of the economic changes. Who did you meet with while you were there?
We had meetings with workers that had been laid off from the state-owned factories and retired workers in the same area in Zhengzhou down in central China, and then also met with peasants in the rural areas who are trying to put co-ops together in their attempts to deal with the market conditions now. And then, as always, I met, you know, with intellectuals and activists, organizers in the cities and in different areas. And then always have some random conversations that are planned, but just with people that I meet in various areas. So.
Now, you describe what you call the almost complete devastation of the urban proletariat in some of the main industrial centers of the country. What happened to people?
What happened was that the government decided basically to privatize the state-owned enterprises, all of under Mao Zedong and the former socialist organization of the society. All of the manufacturing industries, etc., were state-owned. And some of these were on an enormous scale. I was in China in 93, 94, and the city where I was in had a single auto plant with 100,000 or so workers. What happened is that in the late 1990s and then especially in the new century, they moved to either totally privatize these industries or in effect, they were privatized, even if still state-owned, in the sense that the managers, often working with private entrepreneurs, essentially seized control of them. And the idea was to turn them into modern profit-making corporations along the capitalist model. And a major part of this was that a lot of these industries had not been set up to compete in modern market conditions. Were not profitable in the capitalist sense, and they began laying off workers or shutting the factories down, so that you ended up with, estimates vary, and there's different kinds of unemployment, but something like 20, 25 million workers that were laid off from these industries. It was something like the collapse of the Rust Belt in the United States, or the former manufacturing industries in the Middle West, which became known as the Rust Belt. There are now Rust Belts in China, and cities where 100,000 workers were laid off, fired in effect, or given partial payments or retirement benefits, but essentially lost their jobs, and then also lost all the things that went with their jobs in many cases, including health benefits, educational benefits for their kids, housing in many cases. So it's really been a devastating process.
Well, what happens then to those workers who lost their jobs? Do they find other jobs?
Some do. Some are kept on, especially some of the younger or more skilled workers are still kept on in the industries if they're open. Some have moved into the new privatized industries, either in the same regions or have moved to the coastal areas or the south where foreign investment is coming in and building new plants. Some get jobs of that kind, but an enormous number of these workers are either out on the streets essentially hustling or it seems like virtually every taxi driver you meet in China is a laid-off worker from one of these state enterprises. And then a lot of them are really quite destitute. And among the more disturbing things that we heard were grown adult workers who were living off, in some cases, three or four of them, living off a single retired parent. Who would still be getting some benefits from the plant where they had worked, all of them had worked, or from the government. But you would have several generations sometimes living off, one pensioner's income, and obviously not really able to survive in that way very well. So all kinds of things have happened to these workers, but their lives have been, totally turned upside down, and a lot of them are very, very bitter about what's happened to them. They feel they worked for decades to help build the country up and build the industries up where they worked, and then were just thrown out on the street.
How have conditions changed in rural areas as a result of market reforms?
The first and most important aspect of that was going all the way back to the late 70s, early 80s, when they broke up the large state communes that had been set up under during the Mao era, and basically threw all of the farming population into what are called individual contract arrangements with the local governments. So that they each have just their own plots of land to work and have to face the market economy essentially on their own. For a while, this worked fairly well, partly because they were able to draw on the collective accomplishments of the earlier period. But as the cities developed more and more, you began to get an increasingly wide gap between the urban air income level, which has risen considerably, and the rural areas, which have either fallen back or at least remained stagnant. So the gap has become wider and wider. But the biggest problem in the countryside is that as the country has opened up now, the economy has opened up to global forces and to increasingly developed internal capitalist forces. These farmers really cannot make it individually in the market economy. They just have a few acres at most, and they use a lot of very simple, either hand or minimal mechanized production. They simply can't compete with grain coming in from the United States or Australia, or chickens being processed en masse in other countries, and so they really can't make it in the present conditions either. And that has driven them. There's a lot of bitterness in the countryside, too, and some of them have begun to form co-ops to try and buffer the effects of the market conditions, and that was part of what we were looking at, both in 2004, and then I was back this past summer, and we saw even more of that kind of development.
Are the co-ops succeeding in the areas in which they're active?
They're reasonably successful. They are buying supplies together, selling their products in some cases together, building larger facilities, for instance, a grain processing plant or something like that, that does help keep them from some of the worst effects of the market. The concern, in part, is that these co-ops, there's still actually quite few of them in the thousands of villages in China, and they may be gaining a small advantage in relationship to market conditions now, but if more of the farmers begin to do the same kinds of co-ops, then it's not clear that any of them individually will really have that much more of an advantage. So it's not really clear if this is going to be a long-term way to deal with the market conditions. Some people feel it will, others feel that its own ability to deal with the situation is going to prove to be very limited. The government has gotten very worried about the situation, and actually has taken certain steps, such as canceling a national agricultural tax and pumping money into the rural areas for schools in particular, that has eased the condition somewhat over the last couple of years. But again, there's a lot of debate as to how deep and how serious these kinds of efforts are going to prove to be, and whether they're going to make a long-term significant difference or just a temporary sort of easing, which has happened before, and then conditions have continued to deteriorate.
What effect is all this having politically?
Well, part of what's happened is that it's kind of opened some space for the left again in China, which had really been pretty much suppressed after Mao's death. And now what's happening is that a significant number of intellectuals, and especially a lot of working-class people, both peasants and workers, are saying, you know, this really isn't working very well. And some of the critiques that Mao made of the capitalist road, as he called it, are proving to be true. And there's a lot of concern about, as you mentioned in the intro, the rising number of demonstrations, some of which involve tens of thousands of people and at times become quite violent. So it's kind of opened up a new possibility for the left not to control policy. That would be a gross exaggeration. But they're having an influence on policy, and they're being listened to again, and there are websites and forums and meetings even within the party where people are more openly now espousing various kinds of leftist approaches to dealing with this situation. So it's the whole scene in China has in some ways become more fluid than it was even just 5 years or so ago.
Yeah, that's all very interesting. Well, thank you very much for talking to me this morning, Robert, and I'll refer people to your paper so they can read more deeply about what your experience is there.
Okay, thank you. That's on the oaklandinstitute.org website.
Right. Great. Well, thank you very much,
okay.
Robert.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. I've been speaking with Robert Weil. He's a labor organizer and university lecturer in Santa Cruz, California. He's also a senior research fellow at the Oakland Institute, and you can read his policy brief about Chinese workers and the global economy on the Oakland Institute website, which is oaklandinstitute.org, or you can find a link from our website, cooperadio.org/redeye.